It's time to reclaim control, not just of your law firm, but of your life. Welcome to the Law Entrepreneur Podcast. Discover how early adopters are leveraging cutting-edge legal tech and early adoption strategies to lead the industry while embracing work-life balance. Unlock the secrets to a thriving law practice and a balanced, happy life with the Law Entrepreneur Podcast.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 409 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your co-host, as usual, along with my good friend and fellow co-host, Sam Malai, out there on the West Coast. How you doing, Sam?
Fantastic today. Super excited. We're going to be squeezing a lot of value in the next 30 minutes.
No kidding. I mean, 10 years worth of combined experience. Now, I'm older than you, so I've got 10 years worth of bad experiences to complement your 10 years of good experiences. So I think together it's going to be jam-packed.
Yeah, and I think it should have been called 10,000 years of brutally honest lawyer advice, because I am also summarizing a lot of the feedback and the data that I've got from lawyers who have shared with me their advice throughout the years. So we'll be summarizing that and sharing that with you.
Absolutely.
All right, let's start. Let's not waste any time. The first brutally honest lawyer advice in 30 minutes is the reality of work-life balance in law. Neil, is there such a thing as work-life balance in law?
Well, I don't think there is unless you make a concerted effort to manage that relationship. It doesn't come automatically. You have to, first off, manage your own expectations and then deliver based on the reality of the situation.
Yeah, and it comes down to, I think, like, what do you want out of life? What do you want out of life? Is it money? Is it time? Is it freedom? Is it prestige? Is it reputation? What is it for you that trumps everything else? From what I've seen from a lot of lawyers, I think it comes down to freedom of time, freedom of control, freedom of being your own boss. That really trumps everything else. Money's nice. Everything else is nice. Reputation is nice, but nothing trumps having control of your life.
The irony of that is that without a proper work-life balance, you don't have that freedom. You're not in control.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's start off with there. And, you know, let's try to create some triggers or some kind of pointers about how this could be achievable. My exposure to this whole world of work-life balance was from Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek book. And the title of the book is 4-Hour Workweek. But a lot of the principles and things that were shared, I realized that is there such a thing as, is 4-Hour Workweek possible? And the principles that were shared is, I feel like it gets you close to 4 hours, but I think it could also be somewhat of a pipe dream unless if you have the right mindset to continue chipping away until you get there. So I think it comes down to setting boundaries, first of all. Setting boundaries, you knowing you're the boss of your own life, your clients and your prospects don't dictate your schedule. They don't dictate their expectations of you. Ultimately, it's that belief that we're in control. It starts off with that kind of mindset. And then second is being very focused on your schedule and being very cutthroat with your schedule and don't just letting anybody get access to be able to control your schedule. So when it comes to prospects, you know, having time restraints, when you should be able to speak to prospects. If you have clients, maybe not having direct contact with the clients creates some barriers between you and your clients. It just really comes down to healthy boundaries, establishing that and then creating those infrastructure around you to make that possible.
Yeah, and let me add just a couple of real world practical examples of that. So for instance, you know, don't have your cell phone, your personal cell phone. Don't let that be available to your clients. You need to have a separate, I mean, it sounds kind of self-explanatory, but you can't have clients feeling that they can call you on your cell phone 24 hours a day, because that's exactly what they'll do. And, for me personally, I don't even answer my work phone anymore. That goes through a receptionist And I only address those calls at very specific times, scheduled times that we talked about in a couple of episodes ago. So I think you want to make sure that you maintain control over your phone. And similarly with email, I think one of the big challenges, again, me personally as a solo practitioner, I may choose not to work during the day and feel like I want to work in the evening. Okay, that's fine. That's my choice. But don't send emails out after hours. Schedule them to be delivered the following morning at 9 a.m. Because if you start sending emails after hours, your clients are going to start feeling that they can, you know, access you or take advantage of you after hours. And that's an example of setting the priorities and using the technology to establish those boundaries between work and personal life.
Yeah, and everybody has priorities, but I think it just comes down to prioritizing your priorities, you know, and leading with that. You know, if it's a priority, then start off your day with that. A lot of people, you know, leave the business development, the things that are the money makers to, you know, later in the day, you know, hiring after 12 o'clock. No, if it's that important for you and your life, put that foremost in your day and prioritize that. And once you kind of do that, you get that out of the way, it kind of builds the momentum for the rest of your day versus kind of leaving at the end and just like, let me get to it when I get to it.
And you mentioned scheduling regular breaks and vacations to recharge. I guess, you know, that's another thing that we as attorneys do because of the long hours and the high stress that we have in the job. We frequently say, well, I'll take a break or I'll take a vacation when things slow down. And the reality is they never slow down. So you have to be able to put breaks, either a daily break or a weekly break or a vacation break, and put them on your calendar and lock them in, you know, so that they can't be changed. And make sure you take advantage of them. You know, I set a boundary that I wasn't going to work on Fridays. I wanted to leave my calendar completely open on Fridays. Forces me to do more in Monday through Thursday, but I want the Fridays to be flexible for me. So I think that's, you know, something that you need to do. You need to make it a regular practice to schedule breaks and vacations and make sure you take advantage of them.
And don't be afraid to maybe take vacations throughout the day. A lot of people just work.
Yeah.
They have the seasons of work, and then they have the week, one or two weeks off, or they're completely off. But what I like doing is incorporating the breaks throughout the day, throughout the week, randomly, spontaneously, so that, you know, I don't necessarily have to just look forward to that one big vacation. If I want to take a day off on a Monday, I could do that easily. It is completely possible. Yeah.
And I think it's important to ask yourself this question. If you can't step away from your practice for a full day, if the practice can't operate without you having hands-on responsibilities for at least 24 hours and preferably more, then you're never going to be free to establish that work-life balance. And as we're going to talk about in a couple of other these points here coming up, you have to be able to delegate tasks and have systems in place such that your practice operates and continues to run when you're not there.
Great point. Until you have that, you're essentially your prisoner of your own business, which is the worst place to be. All right, let's go to point number two.
Absolutely.
And that is the false hope for passive income or passive business. Again, it's one of those things, those principles that everybody talks about. But is there such a thing as a passive income, Neil?
Yeah, I don't think there is, okay? You can be earning money passively. In other words, people, your clients can be paying their bills without your direct intervention. But to say that you can set up the system such that you can sit on the beach and drink Mai Tais and pina coladas all afternoon and still be making money, that's you know, a desirable goal, but I don't think you can ever get to the point where your law firm is truly a passive income machine. Think, especially with the practice of law. And depending on your practice area, that may be even, you know, more true than other areas. You know, for instance, estate planning, You might have a better chance at that. Criminal law, it's just that's almost impossible to set up a truly passive law practice.
And I agree with that. Essentially, I think my mindset is passive income takes a lot of active work to make it happen.
Yeah.
It takes years to be able to build the team, the infrastructure, the tracking and backend, the marketing, the client support, all that stuff. And even then, when you create it, unless you have an amazing COO, CEO, director who is managing the day-to-day, even then, there are still things that are going to come up almost every single day, at least on a weekly basis, of different fires being, you know, happening, in different issues. Somebody has to watch it. And guess what? Nobody cares as much as you. So even if you have the COO or the CEO, you still have to be somewhat engaged, caring, check in, nudge people along, but completely checking out and just expecting people to take care of things for you is a pipe dream, and it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and I think, look, there's some areas of your workflow can be managed passively, you know, and I think you, with the work that you do in Lawyers Club and My Legal Academy, clearly demonstrate that acquiring new leads can be set up in such a way that once it's set up, you let it run and those leads come in. So to a degree, that becomes a passive activity, but you have to monitor it and somebody has to pay attention that it's continuing to produce in the way that you want it to be productive. So it's not entirely passive, but it's more passive than, say, some other areas. Billing, for instance, and find that if you're going to billing your clients, you know, that's actively engaging. I'm not sure that we'll ever get to a point where that's passively done. Now, you can delegate that responsibility and you can set up systems to leverage the process, but you're always, as you said, you're going to need to be involved at some level. It's never going to be truly passive. So the whole concept of having a passive income generated from your law firm, I agree with you. I think that's a little extreme.
Yeah, and I think passive income is created when you create leverage in your law firm. So, you know, whether the leverage is your team or your marketing or automations, once you set up those systems, the leverage creates those passive work that is being done for you when you're not the bottleneck of that part of your operation. But again, still requires some kind of management to make sure that those leverages are being done effectively, being managed well by people who are managers. And you still, again, all managers need managers. So there's no such thing as, you know, everybody just, you know, check out and do whatever you want. But, you know, if passive income is the goal, then I think you have to actively, you know, work in your business. That becomes your cash flow. And then look for other passive ways to be able to have your money make money for you. And that's what I think I've been kind of more interested in the last couple of years. The first, say, 6 to 7 years was all about, you know, learning the art and the game of making money. But the second game is much to completely different game, different rules, different, its own limitations, its own kind of understanding is your money making money for you. You know, that comes into the realm of real estate and stocks and crypto and other investment opportunities. And that's something that I think I'm super kind of intrigued and interested about. And Neil, I would love to be able to do an episode about that. You know, what is working right now when it comes to passive investments, passive incomes, or things like that, that's working right now?
Yeah, I have to admit, you know, that I'm still unclear about crypto. And I know that it's one of those things that I have lots of entrepreneurial friends who are doing just that. They're turning around their income from their businesses and then investing it in a way that it becomes a secondary passive income stream. And cryptocurrency is a large part of their portfolio. And I have to admit, I personally have not spent the time to educate myself in that area.
Good news is, hopefully we'll do a full episode because it's something that I'm like passionate about, the future of money. And because our podcast is a lot about foresight and being an early adopter, I think that will be really relevant for our audience.
Well, I'm looking forward to being the student in that respect.
Great. All right. Let's move on to the third brutally honest lesson that we've learned as lawyers is the hard truth about client relationships. Neil, I want to hear your insights about how it is dealing with clients on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the big challenges. And I think for me personally, it's one of my strengths because, look, I can honestly say, like, I'm not the best attorney in the world. There's a lot that I have left to learn. But I do a good job in managing the client relationships. And I do that largely on a personal basis. But, you know, I have help with that, you know, client relationship administrator who supports my efforts in that area. But managing your clients, managing their expectations, making sure that the information flow is two-way and timely and professional, then also addressing quickly and sufficiently those difficult clients, because there's going to be difficult clients in different ways. You know, clients end up being difficult because just they're difficult people to work with, or they have challenges that you have to understand and respect, or they have issues in their lives that you are well advised to understand and respond to. So it's not just one, you know, cut and dry answers to who's a difficult client and who isn't. I will say that one of the first lessons I learned when I initially was doing family law matters is, you know, your folks who come to the family law practice oftentimes are angry. They're angry about the situation that they find themselves in. And that's true for a lot of different practice areas. But when your gut tells you that this is a client that you don't feel comfortable working with, you have to trust your gut and you have to, you know, cut the relationship loose and move on. And that's pretty difficult in the beginning, particularly if it's a client that potentially has can mean a lot of money to you or a lot of potential referrals. You got to be honest and with yourself. And like I said, I've always ended up learning that you get that icky feeling. I know that's not exactly a technical term, but when you get that feeling that, you know, whatever this person's issue is, I don't feel like I'm going to be able to serve them well. You got to get out of that relationship.
And I'm sure a lot of our listeners right now be like, yeah, I feel you, Neil.
Yeah.
For me, it's just, I think it comes down to expectations, setting the right expectations with your clients and kind of not overpromising, setting healthy boundaries, especially early in the relationship, and honestly, underpromising and just over delivering versus overpromising and under delivering. So, Neil, you brought up amazing points, you know, kind of being able to know who you should work with, kind of having that good, trusting your gut instinct about, you know, is this a person that I want to work with? Again, life is short. If you're upset and things upset you, just try to cut those relationships early so that, you know, not in this ongoing cycle of just negativity.
And let me give just a little piece of advice about how to let a client go in a way that doesn't come back to haunt you. Now, I've had this happen, you know, not a lot of times, but more than a few. And I learned very early on is to let the client know that, you know what, your needs, your challenges, I feel, are bigger or more complex than I'm able to address. And so I shifted, you know, and to the point of saying, it's not you, it's me. Now, it takes a little bit of humility because it really is you, it's not me. But if you are able to, with some authenticity, say, look, I think what you're looking for or what your needs are better served by somebody with more experience or somebody who has a different perspective or a different approach to business or to law, then I think you'd be better off with somebody else. And I'm happy to recommend someone or help you find someone. And that way they leave on good terms. You've severed the relationship, but they think you've done so because you have their interests in mind. And at the end of the day, you really do, because you want them to be satisfied, get their legal issue resolved, but you can't see yourself completing the task. So it's one way to do it.
And I'll give two pieces of advice for anybody who's struggling with this department of dealing with your clients. Number one, in my experience, we found that hiring a client success manager whose only job is to just proactively contact your clients proactively and give them status updates. Even if there are no status updates, still that's still a good update. Say, hey, we're still working on your case. You know, the next thing on our pipeline is by November 1st, we're looking to do this. At that point, we'll contact you at that time, blah, blah, blah. Proactively doing that saves a lot of headache. If you put yourself in the shoes of your clients, you know, they're dealing with some kind of issue or something that they need. And if they're in the dark, then they kind of start questioning things. They start doubting you. Are they, you know, do they even know that I have a case with you? But if you have just, you know, somebody who just focus on that and just does that proactively, I've seen that does wonders.
Yeah.
And then second is reading your Google reviews, knowing your strengths and knowing your weaknesses. Easy thing you can do is to go to your Google reviews and literally click on show more reviews. So you see all your reviews in one shot. Then all you do is you hit Control A, select all your reviews, copy it, throw it into ChatGPT and say, hey, I'm at this type of law firm in this city. I want you to analyze my reviews and tell me what are my top five strengths. Also, what are my top five weaknesses? And how would I be able to improve my law firm based on the reviews? And see what ChatGPT tells you. And I think it's really important to not only lean into your strengths, and you know, if you see those buzzwords or things that's being used in Google reviews, make sure that's prominent on your website and your funnels, your emails and texts. But also understand what your weaknesses are so you can hire for those things or work on your client workflows. You know, if it's things about communication, then you work on that. If it's things about speed, then you work on that. But kind of like knowing yourself and continue refining your client workflows is key. Again, the growth happens where there's focus there. So just give more focus to that end. As soon as you do that, then you will see improvement and you will have a way to be able to grow happily.
You know, one other quick tip about managing client relationships that I learned from my dentist. Whenever you sign up a new client, one of the main questions on your new client, you know, questionnaire should be, how do you prefer that we communicate with you? Okay. Some people want you to communicate over the phone. Some people want you to use text messaging. Some people want you to send email. Some people have other communication systems that they pay attention to more frequently. Know that for every client and make sure that your client success manager is honoring that preference. It makes a huge difference.
Great point. Great point, Neil. All right, let's go to fourth brutally honest advice for lawyers, and that's the hard facts and myths about law firm economics. Okay, this comes down to, you know, the KPIs and your profits and revenues when it comes to your law firm. Neil, what have you seen in this realm?
Yeah, you know, here's an area where I was, again, slow to recognize what it was I didn't know. I kept great books about the economic status of my company, but I wasn't getting the insight from that I wanted. And I was in the pay myself at the end of the month with whatever's left over mentality. So I did two things. One, you know, became more of a profit first advocate. In other words, I'm going to pay myself first and then manage the law firm with what's left. And that's being profit focused and not revenue focused? Because you could have $1 million of revenue, but if you only have 5% profit, you know, you're not making any money. So you have to focus on the profit first. And then I got help. I got expertise. You know, we'll talk about mentorship in a little bit, but I got a fractional CFO, chief financial officer, a person who gives me that 40,000 foot look at where we are and where we're going, really kind of helps me focus on generating a budget and sticking to that budget. And it's not any surprise that my law firm really started to be successful financially when I did those two things, focus on profit and hire a fractional CFO.
I love it. I love that. For me, I think it just comes down to don't believe everything you hear and don't chase. You know, there's these Instagram pages, Neil, that post settlements, these big settlements that law firms achieve. And every time that happens, I always get texts, "Hey, Sam, I'm thinking about doing this." I'm like, "Why? Did you just see this recent settlement from this law firm?" And like, yeah. I'm like, "Why are you always following someone else?" And, you know, those numbers, first of all, are misleading. First of all, just because somebody settled for seven figures doesn't mean they're a millionaire. Obviously, there's attorney's fees. There was a lot of work that was put, a lot of manpower that it took to be able to make that happen. And also, maybe they had to go through 200 clients to be able to get that seven-figure settlement.
Well, that's exactly the truth. As a former, before I did family law, I did personal injury law. And you got to do a whole lot of $3,000 car accident fender benders and hope of finding that seven-figure, you know, case.
Right. And the other thing is, as you mentioned, Neil, the difference between profit versus revenue. There's top line revenue, which is how much money you make. But ultimately what matters, Neil, is the net profit. And that net profit is key. It comes down to managing your expenses, making sure that you're actually tracking your expenses. A lot of people don't even know what's going on. They just make money and don't even know what the actual net profit is. And as Neil, as you shared, you know, having that CTO, the chief financial officer, who can come in and first get those numbers for you, analyze it, see where we can cut the fat, see where we can, where's the low hanging fruit that we could double down on. But ultimately, it's not about how much you make, it's about what you keep. So, you know, let's focus on the profit.
And I would think along those lines, what I've found is that from a profitability standpoint, it's ruthlessly managing your expenditures. Okay. We oftentimes get into these reoccurring expenses and we forget we're paying them. And all of a sudden at the end of the year, we see we've paid $5,000 for what? What was that service that I bought that I never used? You have to really look at those on a monthly and quarterly basis. And if it's not returning some type of response, whether it be actual money or reducing your level of effort, you gotta cut it out.
Yeah. And also I think a lot of it also comes down to creating realistic growth goals and going for it.
Yeah.
Whether that be, you know, creating goals that are big enough that kind of motivates you to grow, but also is something that's realistic. From what I've seen,
I always opted for the achievable goal.
Achievable, but a little bit far beyond what you think you can do, so you can actually strive for it. In my first 3-4 years, my numbers were 4x. Every year I was growing at 4x. Then at some point, I think it was ended up leveling off to 2.2. So that's where I've kind of been. But from what I've seen, 2x is possible. It's completely possible. I think it's a good goal. Kind of, again, establishing where you are right now with your... you can only manage your revenue in the beginning when you're looking to grow. So looking to double your revenue from there. And then once you kind of work on doubling your revenue, then at that point, getting very granular about your net. But from what I've seen, 2x growth is a good, ambitious goal that is completely possible with good strategic planning and with good support that could help you get there.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that because, you know, when I first hired my CFO, he was asking me what my growth expectations were. And I said, well, like anything else, I want to grow as much as I possibly can. And he said, well, how about we just settle on 2x? Because that would be better than what you did last year. And I'm, okay, that's a good point.
That's great. And the last thing I want to share is comparison is the death of joy. So don't compare yourself to anybody else. You're on your own path. Doesn't matter what settlements people are settling and what they're doing, or there's a moneymaker here. You know, kind of put your blinders on, focus on your own path, and you know, then just you'll see that you'll be a much happier person by doing that.
Absolutely.
All right. So just to recap, the 10 years of brutally honest lawyer advice in 30 minutes. I think that is exactly about 30 minutes. Is the number one, the reality of work-life balance. We talked about that that work-life balance is achievable as long as you prioritize your priorities, you create boundaries, and that have in mind that balancing your work also has to be personalized to you. So lean to that and make it possible for yourself. The second one we talked about was the false hope for passive income. Passive income takes a lot of active work. So unless if you're willing to put in the time and the work to make that happen, there's no such thing as a completely passive income. You still need to at least manage your managers who are managing the day-to-day to make that possible. The third we talked about, the hard truth about client relationships, one of the hardest part of running a law firm. Don't overpromise. Instead, underpromise and over-delivered results. Set clear expectations and trust your instincts when it comes to your clients. And number four, we talked about don't believe everything you hear when it comes to people's settlements and things like that. Focus on your profits because ultimately that's what you keep. And Neil, we have at least four amazing good ones we're looking at right now, but we're going to save that for the next episode. So make sure to tune in for that.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much for listening in. Make sure to share this episode with one person that you haven't shared with before. We appreciate it. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Next time.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.